Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
All right, we bring in the professor every day at 4 o'clock. Talk a little bit of NFL. John, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Doing great, yeah. Any news out of Seahawk camp and the NFL as far as COVID goes? We saw in Major League Baseball a number of teams. The numbers are starting to spike a little bit. We've heard a lot of talk about it, but seems like, anyway, the NFL is doing a pretty good job. I heard that in Carolina they have like these buzzers that go off every 9 minutes, and you're supposed to move away from the person that you're sitting next to or something. So it certainly sounds, anyway, like they're doing everything they possibly can.
In the NFL. And right now we're about 88 as far as the number of positive tests. And so far, so good as far as Seattle. No positive test of late. There's about maybe five teams in that category. I don't want to jinx it, but tests are all coming back and all those different things. And some guys are now starting to come off the list. And so it's pretty good as far as that goes. And what you're talking about with the buzzer is one of the things that each team has is a buzzer. When you're in the facility, if you're in the team hotel, it does multiple things. One, it kind of tracks where you are. And then if you get a certain distance in front of somebody, then it buzzes to say, get away, get away. You can't do this. You're too close. And so that's one of the things that's going to be there. Now, I'm going to be interested to see as they practice how that's going to work, because I think you're not going to give the 6 foot distance and all that stuff with a guard going against a defensive tackle. Right. So I don't know how that works. Maybe what it comes down to is those buzzers are going to be, in the locker room awaiting them after practice. But it seems to be, going good so far. Now, again, we're still in the beginning stages. We're still in the stage right now where teams are, starting to be allowed with the two positive negative tests to go back into facility. And then some teams now are always starting to, get their conditioning going, taking that period now for eight of 9 days to get in shape. And then, of course, after that, on the 17th of August, that's when you can put the pads on.
Okay, John, Gardner Minshew's on the COVID-19 list.
As is Matthew Stafford.
Matthew Stafford. So what does that mean exactly? I mean, they go into quarantine for 14 days or what happens?
They go into quarantine for an X number of days. I mean, it depends on, how the tests are. Because they'll test them pretty much every day when they have been given the positive test. Technically, they go on an injured list that doesn't count against the roster. But like today, there's probably about maybe, 8 to 10 players who ended up, at least being allowed to go back in because they cleaned things up. So it's an X number of days. I mean, the average is supposed to be around 10, but I would expect it's probably going to be shorter than that. And so I don't know if Stafford is staying at home, if he's staying in a hotel. Same thing with Gardner Minshew. They have to figure out where they're going to be to isolate away from everybody. That's why you have to have tracers to go back and say, okay, who have you been around? But like the Jacksonville Jaguars, for example, they've had a dozen players that have tested positive. They've been able to get about maybe 4 or 5 of them back. But it's not a solid number of days, but enough days that at least you can be quarantined, stay away from everybody, and then try to heal up.
John, with all the cases popping up in the major leagues, teams being shut down, the Marlins were shut down. Miami was shut down. What are the chances what do you think the chances are that the NFL actually completes their season?
Well, I mean, I can't tell you about the second wave. I mean, but just dealing with the first wave, I think that they get started, and then depending where the second wave goes, that's where we'll find out how far into the season they can go. But I have to think that they have a good chance of being able to survive, particularly as bad as it is right now. I don't know if it can be worse. And so if it's not going to be worse, they can get through this and go all the way through. Because what you're looking at is that you got three bubbles. One bubble is going to be the team facility. That's a very safe place for the most part, as long as you don't bring anything back. Number two is going to be the team hotel. And then number three, and this is where the iffy part is going to be at home. That's why a team with great leadership, and that's where I think this team can come out ahead, because you go to the young defensive backs with Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams and says, no, you guys can't go out. You have Dwayne Brown telling the young offensive lineman, you got to sacrifice yourself and stay at home, or make sure you stay at a hotel, wherever it's going to be, but don't go out. I mean, you can get K.J. Wright and Bobby Wagner doing that to the linebackers, and Russell Wilson doing it to the offensive guys, Tyler Lockett doing it to the wide receivers. And if they can do that, and as long as the players don't bring anything back, then I think you can get through. But even if they do, then you have to identify it immediately and try to make sure that you can go ahead and get it taken care of and figure out, okay, who may have it and what can you figure out as far as that. But I think they can get through, because we're seeing this wave right now, with the 88 guys that have tested positive. We're now probably in the 70s, and once they get through this, technically they should be fine as long as nothing new happens.
Boy, it sure isn't, won't be, because they're trying, John, because, we just kind of picture what it's like, but we've all been down to the VMAC a million times, and I was looking on Seahawks.com, and they have all of these tents outside and, these ramps, and everybody's staying away from each other and everybody's in masks. And then, I'm sure at the hotel, there's no roommates, right?
No.
Remember, it used to be Russell Wilson and Robert Turbin. That was his roommate. And now everybody's got their own rooms. I mean, they're going to a great expense and really taking care. And they should, because, and that's the thing that, the good old, the mighty dollar. I mean, look, there's a lot on the line here for them. They're very well incentivized, in other words, to spend as much time and money as they possibly can on this thing, because look, there's a lot at stake financially.
Yeah, agreed. And that's why you noticed that the New Orleans Saints stepped up, and they pretty much, I don't know if they totally secured the Omni, not too far away from there, but they secured a hotel where they try to make sure that's going to be their sanctuary. That's going to be where they're going to try to keep everything under control. And I think the way they have it phrased is, at the moment, up until the first week of September, they're going to have 185 people in that hotel. So you're going to have staffers, coaches, players. There's going to be limitations to what they can do, because pretty much, you can't leave the hotel. And also, I think there'll be a limitation to the number of people that can go up in the elevators at a different time. And just like you talked about at the beginning of the show, everybody's going to have that little buzzer, and the buzzer is going to go off as close as you are to everybody. So, yeah, I think that they've done that. They put rules in place that says it's not as strict as, say, hockey. But, like, you can't go to a sporting event. You can't go to a concert. You can't go to a park, where there's a lot of people. You can't be around more than 15 people in any kind of conglomeration. And so all those things are there, and it's a matter of, it's like, okay, it's August. I mean, if you get through this stuff now through the regular season, that takes us to January. If you can sacrifice yourself through then and you come out and you make the playoffs, then, of course, all things can go good. So, and a team like this team, has got to realize, it's like, okay, everything's on the line right now, because they're going to be competing for a Super Bowl. And, why ruin it for your teammates?
Okay, John, last week the Seahawks released Brandon Jackson, a defensive lineman, and today they re-signed him. I'm assuming it's going to be at a lower deal than the 2.1 he was slated to make until he was released last week.
Yeah, and I know they released a defensive tackle, John Avery, today, but it was kind of curious. See if you kind of follow my vibes here. They were at 78 players, after cutting Jackson and also cutting Joey Hunt. Okay, so they get Jackson back, and I'm sure what he did, because he was making the escalator at the restricted free agent number at 2.133 million, and now I'm sure he came back and signed for 1 year, $825,000. So that took them to 79. Gee, do you think there's a chance that Joey Hunt is going to do exactly the same thing? And I would say the answer is there, because, all right, you saw Jordan Roos. Jordan Roos was claimed by the Las Vegas Raiders, and so he's no longer available. And so Joey Hunt's been out there for a week, and nothing has happened. My guess is the next signing is going to be Joey Hunt for 1 year, $825,000.
John, last week, Aaron Rodgers went on air and spoke about how he felt when Jordan Love was drafted this past NFL draft. How long do you think Aaron Rodgers is going to be there? Do you think he finishes his career as a Green Bay Packer? Do you think he leaves in a couple of years? What are your thoughts on that whole situation?
It's going to be the same thing that he experienced when they drafted him when Brett Favre was there. He's going to be there 2 years, and 2 years, and that's it. I mean, he'd like to be there four, he'd like to be there five, but you know, you're not going to take Jordan Love and draft him, even though it was a big mistake, and say, okay, we're fine on all this stuff, and you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to play 4 years. No, I mean, you know, after 2 years, even though Brett Favre was continuing to threaten retirement every year, what ended up happening is after 2 years, he was gone, traded to the Jets, and then you can see that it's going to probably be something where Aaron Rodgers will be up in 2 years. You got a lot of older quarterbacks that are going to be in either their last or next to last year, and so I would anticipate that you know, he'll be traded to one of those teams that still thinks that they can go to the Super Bowl or go to the playoffs. So in the end, 2 years, and that's it.
Hey, John, I know you talked about this on your show earlier today, but The Rock purchased an XFL for $15 million. And so, you know, we were kind of talking about the development, and it's really too bad that that didn't, you know, it got clipped because of COVID-19, because we were just talking about college football players getting paid and how, you know, there's not really like a minor league or anything like that for the NFL. And the XFL seemed to be a really good, sort of like stepping stone farm type system for the NFL. I really hope that it takes off. And I guess the fact that The Rock, you know, is in on it now makes me feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, I do too. And of course, I was in the movie Game Plan with The Rock and spent a bunch of time with him and really grew to like him. And he was very gracious with me. And the one thing that, you know, he knows how to sell things. I mean, you can see that he sells his HBO show so well. You can see that he sells his wrestling. You can see that anything that he does movie-wise or anything else, he's very good at. And so, you know, for $15 million, and I think they had to assume like about $8.5 million of some liability, you know, they get something that even though it's going to probably have to compete against some college football, I think that it has a chance because, you know, I know that ESPN and ABC is all in on doing the broadcast. I would assume that the NBC would be all in on doing the broadcast. And so you put all that together, and I think it does have a chance. So let's hope, because I think that you can see a developmental league like that is good for football in general. It gets players and quarterbacks. And what I like more than anything else, and I think that very few people have talked about this, they did a great, and I mean a great job in minority coaching. Because, I mean, you saw minority head coaches, coordinators, and it's so vital right now in, you know, in this sport that you, because, you know how the things go. It's like, okay, you become a coordinator in the NFL, and then within a couple years, if you're good on a good team, then you get a chance to get a head coaching job. Well, that's not happening. You don't have, as bad as it is right now for minority head coaches, it's even worse for coordinators. And so now, with this league, and they did a great job last year in the XFL, I mean, you had up and down the league coordinators that I think were good, and they were a minority, and they were able to grow along with quarterbacks that never get a chance to play. I think it has a chance.
I love the XFL. I thought it was fun, John. I like the extra points where you had the option of 1, 2, and 3 points. I mean, I thought more teams should have gone for the 3-point extra point from the 10-yard line. They didn't take my advice on that, though, Professor.
No, they didn't, which, of course, was wise. Because what was it, like about a 14% success rate?
Yeah, probably so. Okay, I've got one for you, John. You're predicting that Joey Hunt will be the next signing for the Seahawks. You want to hear who I'm predicting?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, Brian Winters. He's a right guard who was released by the New York Jets. He's coming off a shoulder injury, which limited him to only 9 games this last season. They wanted to make a salary cap move because he was making $7 million or something like that. So he started 79 games for the Jets at right guard. And Professor, that's the position that they're expecting Damian Lewis, a rookie, to take over and be the starter for DJ Fluker. Okay, now are you still with me?
I'm with you, yeah.
Okay. You've got Brandon Schell starting at right tackle. He's your projected starting right tackle. Where did he play last year, John?
He played with the New York Jets at right tackle.
That's right. Can you imagine bringing in Brian Winters? You'd have that cohesion that you're always talking about along the offensive line. Damian Lewis isn't going to be able to get up to speed during the COVID-19 situation.
You know, how do you
know
that?
Well, I don't know that. I'm just speculating, John. Yeah, I'm just trying to sound like I know what I'm talking about. I don't know if you listen to the show.
Go, Jim. Go.
Okay, but bring in Brian Winters and just put him in there at right guard. You got a veteran guy, and then he could groom and be a mentor for Damian Lewis. They're going to sign Brian Winters tomorrow, John. What do you think?
No, I don't think so.
Come on, Professor. But again, one time, say, Jim, you might be right.
Well, you're saying you're going to sign him tomorrow. You're not going to be right. They're not going to sign him tomorrow. They're not going to be able to bring him in tomorrow. So it's like it's not happening. But I don't think it's a bad idea. But now the question is going to be, what's his salary going to be? Because you've got now teams that are, and you have to almost, if you're going to be Brian Winters, you're going to try to wait a couple of days to take a look and see, because right now they haven't completed the opt-out clause contract with the Players Association. They expect to get that done in the next 24 hours, and it's supposed to be 7 days after that. But they think what they're going to do is close the opt-outs on Thursday or Friday. And if that's going to be the case, then, because again, you're seeing who are the guys that are opting out. Defensive tackles and offensive linemen. And so if you get a chance to get a starting job and maybe get some good money, then you can do that. But in this case, I think that it's not a bad idea because, he has been a starter. He does know Brandon Schell, who will be the right tackle. But again, if he could do it for the minimum, no problem. But he may have an opportunity to go someplace else where maybe a starting guard opts out. And if that's the case, it'll be too expensive and they shouldn't do it.
All right, John, you've probably been asked this question a bunch of times already, but I haven't spoken to you in a minute, so let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Who is the best player in the NFL? Top 100. They have Lamar Jackson at 1, Wilson 2, Donald 3, Mahomes 4. Are you one of those guys who feel like Mahomes should be at the top of this list?
Absolutely. Yeah, Mahomes 1 and maybe Russell Wilson 1A. But I think the edge has to go to Mahomes because he started his career as great as any quarterback that we've ever seen. I mean, he's starting it like a Hall of Famer. And I mean, he's already got a Super Bowl ring. He's already set up to maybe start getting a little bit of a dynasty going. He's already got the contract extension and everything else. But the big thing is how good he is and how he continues to grow. And so the idea, I know Lamar, he was on a 14-win team that ran the ball, had a good defense and all that stuff. I mean, you want the MVP to be up there. But usually when I go with rating the quarterbacks, I take the MVP, unless it's Patrick Mahomes, or if it's going to be Russell Wilson in the future, and I'd say, okay, MVP is going to be number 4. I mean, I did that with Cam Newton. I did that with Matt Ryan. But in this case, Lamar Jackson should be at least maybe number 4, but not higher than that. In fact, in many ways, he probably should be number 6. But I'd say Mahomes with Russell Wilson right behind.
Well, don't you think that they should... Because Brady didn't have a great year last year. So I feel like they need to do a better job of defining it. Was it because, from the 2019 season? Because if it was from the 2019 season, I'd say, it would have to be Mahomes and then probably Lamar Jackson. Because
I still think that's too high.
14-2 team.
They were 14-2 team, but was it a 14-2 team?
And he rushed for 1,200 yards.
Yeah.
And he threw only five interceptions? 36 touchdowns, something like that.
I still think Lamar's too high.
He had the best year.
Even 1 or 2 is still too high. He's still a quarterback that's proving himself. And clearly, to be in that elite group, to be even in the top 6, is remarkable, particularly with the growth that he has. But I can't put him above Russell Wilson, and I can't put him above Patrick Mahomes. And I know that you bring up Tom Brady. What did he drop to, number 12? I mean, Aaron Rodgers did drop, I think, out of the top 5 to, like, number, 4 or 6, something like that. It's somewhere in that neighborhood. But I think in the end, it's, Mahomes 1, Russell Wilson 2, and a little bit down the way, there's going to be Lamar Jackson.
Are you skeptical that Jackson's going to be able to continue to run the ball? I mean, I feel like he's going to get hit at some point. Mm-hmm. I mean, 1,200 yards, and I mean, he's so athletic and makes people miss. He doesn't seem to get squared up, but yeah, I just wonder how long that's going to last. But the good news is with Jackson is that he's a good passer. He had better numbers than Russell, actually. Maybe not yardage, but as far as completion percentage and interceptions and touchdowns.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, you can see, and it's we have never seen a rise like this of young quarterbacks. Because, in fact, I still put Deshaun Watson over Lamar Jackson. But with three young quarterbacks in the first 2 or 3 years of their career to emerge at this level is pretty remarkable when you think about it. Because for how many years, more than a decade, it was okay. Who's number one? Is it going to be Brady or is it going to be Rodgers? Rodgers or Brady? Rodgers. And it's like it was that way forever. Just like it was in the 2000 to 2010. Okay, is it going to be Brady? Is it going to be Peyton Manning? But now you have three guys, and they've they've risen to a high level so early. And, you know, what you look at is that, okay, Jackson was a catalyst on that team. Watson's been able to take a 6-win Houston team and get him into the playoffs with 9 wins in 3 out of 4 years, two out of 3 years, whatever it is. You know, these guys are good and they're young.
Professor, I was trying to listen to what you were just saying there, but my wife is vacuuming, my dog is barking, and now my wife is scolding the dog for peeing in the house. So I apologize for not
being... Well, let's put it this way. I'm just glad that she's not scolding you for peeing in the house.
Oh, and John...
That's been known to happen.
John, get a load of this one. So, you know, I had this great prediction about Brian Winters coming to Seattle. Yeah. It all seemed to fit. Well, some listeners texted in and said, hey, Jim, Brian Winters is going to sign with the Bills.
Buffalo Bills, yeah.
So, yeah, I Googled Brian Winters and Bills, and the listeners are right, John.
Yeah, no, in fact, I neglected to say
that. He's going
to
Buffalo.
He's going to Buffalo because what happened is John Feliciano tore a pec and is out for the season. And so they lost the starting guard. And so now, just like I said, if you lose a starting guard, either an opt-out or an injury, now that opens the starting job for sure. And Brian Winters did indeed get a deal with the Buffalo Bills.
John,
so that means he's not going to go tomorrow, by the way.
John, you've been around the league for a while, and we always try to compare guys, right? If you had to compare Jamal Adams to a player from the past, who would you compare him to?
I'd say, because...
Bob Sanders with
Bob Sanders? Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. Bob Sanders, because a bigger version of Bob Sanders, because, you know, Bob, unfortunately, because he wasn't so big, you know, had a shorter career. But, you know, he had a defensive MVP type year, 1 year defensive player of the year. I mean, the guy was just a great hitter, had great range, you know. But you know, what I guess the comparable, even though it's not exact, is that what you look at, he's Jamal Adams is Cam Chancellor with speed and range and the ability to sack the quarterback. I mean, I think his leadership's good. His knowledge of the game is much like Cam Chancellor. I mean, again, I think he's going to be a good one. And, you know, for all the people that, you know, say that, well, boy, they overpaid for him. I mean, I have to look at the numbers, but it's really, if they would trade up from their spot in the draft to the 6th pick, which, of course, the Jets had the 6th pick, that's pretty much what you would have to pay. And to get a guy like that who's a generational-type player, I think that it's worth it.
Yeah, I agree. John, thank you so much for not only all the answers, but also for telling Jim that he did not have a terrible idea.
No, he didn't
That's
have a terrible
as good as it
idea.
Got.
But again,
was
my thinking process on that right? It's like, okay, because of the opt-outs and everything else, if there's a starting job out there, that's going to be the place he'll go. And guess what? That's where he went.
Well, I liked your line of thinking when you speculated that Jim peed in the house, too. Mm-hmm. So that was good. Also. All right, Professor, thanks. We appreciate
thanks.
It. Okay. Hey, if you missed any of today's cold, hard facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. I almost told John to have a good weekend there for a second. Oh, it's Monday. Never mind. So coming up next, though, over the weekend, we had some pretty good games. Mariners may have lost their last two, but there's a lot to like in this weekend's game. We'll talk some Mariners. That's next on Bob, Dave, and More.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome back to Bob, Dave, and More. We got Michael Bumpus filling in today. And guys, it was a pretty decent weekend. The pitching really is what has really stood out to me from the Mariners. So they're now 4-6, but pitching looked up. Mariners pitchers have allowed 3 or fewer earned runs in the last 4 games. So saw Taijuan Walker especially, 7 scoreless innings, 1 hit, 2 walks, 8 strikeouts, and I read that was his longest outing since 2017 and the 4th longest outing in his career. So struck out the side in the 5th. So that part was good to see, because we had seen that the Mariners were the worst as far as pitching goes for on-base percentage against opponents second time through the lineup. So, you know, we weren't seeing a lot of good pitching performances, and even Kikuchi went 6 in a loss, but You know, he went six innings. So this next time through, what do we got? Sheffield tonight, I think. Sheffield versus Frankie Montas with the A's. So be interesting to see if he follows this trend.
Well, yeah, maybe. You know, the thing is, they could salvage a 2-2 split with the A's tonight. But no, you're right, Dave. Taijuan Walker was fantastic on Friday and only giving up one hit in seven innings. Incredible. And then being out there for 94 pitches, too. But I was more impressed with Kikuchi, as I mentioned to Ryan Divish earlier when we had him on. I've never seen him like that. It was just the velocity that he had in the mid to high 90s. And he just kept. He just had a different look to him. He just, all the hitters just seemed overmatched with him. And he just looked every bit the ace. I was really pleasantly surprised to see that. Six innings, three hits, no runs, and nine strikeouts. And it could have been more than that. So I think the vacuum is scared Sky downstairs, so she's right down here behind me. And then Kendall Graveman, I thought he was great yesterday. It wasn't as good as his first outing, but that guy's a gamer. He looked like he was laboring quite a bit, and come to find out that he's got an issue with his neck. But he was out there for five innings, five scoreless innings, and he had some bad breaks there. There was a pitch to Kemp that could have been called a strike that would have ended the inning. And then I think it was Semien, the next batter, had the grounder to Dylan Moore, and he barely beat that out. And then Margavacis or whatever, he came in. I talked to Shannon on Twitter wondering why they brought in a lefty to face a righty in Laureano, and she said his splits are pretty even, lefty against righty or going both ways. So I still would have rather seen a right-hander in that situation, but all in all, the pitching looks good, the starting pitching anyway.
I'm so easy to get back into the optimistic type of way of thinking, you know what I mean? I'm like, this is the second time through the rotation. Maybe they're starting to figure things out because these guys are facing a time and a schedule that they've never faced before. So I'm going to go out there and say that the second time around the rotation, these guys are getting comfortable. They're filling their bodies out. They're getting healthy and routines, right? Sports is all about routines, especially baseball players. Maybe they're getting their routines down. This is a young team. There's so many things that need to be figured out with this team. As soon as something pops or something goes well, I'm going to jump all over it and say they're starting to figure this thing out. Now they got to get the bats going again. We're only producing two runs, and you know that's another struggle. But you see guys like Kyle Lewis making plays. You see a guy like Evan White showing his glove on first base. You see Kikuchi a second time around looking better. So I think we're going to experience a lot of this with this team. They're going to look great at some times. They're going to look really bad at other times. Let's just see how this thing unfolds.
It's funny. I'm sitting here with a smile on my face, Bump, because I'm the same way when it comes to baseball. I'm like, why not, man? I mean, I remember last year when they were 13-2, I was like, oh, they're going to keep going with this thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what it is. But, you know, you mentioned Evan White in cut number 13. There was just a beautiful double play that was turned by Shed Long, J.P. Crawford, and Evan White.
0-1 pitch here from Kikuchi. And here it comes, swung on and hit up the middle. Shed Long backhand, flips to J.P. Crawford, throws, and that's a double play. Are you kidding? That was gorgeous. Shed Long going towards left field, flipped it to J.P., coming across the bag. He got up in the air, threw a one-hopper to Evan White, dug it out for the double play, inning over. Wow. That was special.
Yeah, and it's funny. That's Bob's guy, J.P. Crawford, and he is so much fun to watch. But in the leadoff position, Jim, it's looking pretty good. He's having a lot of success there, batting leadoff. And then, you know, all of that was, I think, maybe the most impressive part. I love J.P. Crawford's arm, but watching Evan White pick that thing, I mean, that's got to be one of the more difficult things. That's got to be right up there with, like, hitting, you know? I mean, trying to hit a big league pitch. I mean, scooping a ball off, especially when sometimes it's in the dirt, sometimes it'll come off the grass if it's a throw from third base. I mean, that was just an awesome display of talent all the way around by those three players.
Well, yeah, and I was just thinking about all the practice that goes into turning a double play like that, too, because when you're in a shift situation like they were there, that you're in a spot that you're not familiar with. Usually Shed Long's over – to the left of second base, or to the right, however you're looking at it. And yet he went all the way across center field and then flipping it back and then White on the other end. Evan White's going to save so many errant throws with the way he plays over there. And now you hope to see his bat get going a little bit. He looks good to me in the box. I'm sure that he projects to hit major league pitching. They wouldn't have given him that $24 million contract over 6 years if they didn't feel that way. And I'm sure he's going to get it going, but he's only hitting 139 tonight, but he's in the lineup and batting seventh. The one thing I did find this curious, and it's a negative thought, but you know, no shot coming from me. I was surprised Friday night when there was a one-hopper hit to Evan White. Now, granted, the ball was like a pool ball, you know, a cue ball, and it kind of had some weird English on it. But it was still a play that I thought he should have made, but they gave the Oakland player a hit on the play, and it seemed like he got some home cooking from the scorer on that one. But still, all in all, he looks sensational over there.
Yeah, and let's listen to Kyle Lewis. I just want to talk about him a little bit. I'm so happy for this kid. And as Divish said, that you know, just the fact that he's healthy is really a big bonus for him. But, man, he hit a home run yesterday.
The 0-1. Swing and a high fly ball deep into the gap in left center field. Laureano going back, looking up, and goodbye baseball. And that's the way to extend your hitting streak to 10 games. Kyle Lewis, way out of here, beyond the Mariners' bullpen in left center field. His third home run of the season. It's now a one-run ball game. It's the A's 3 and the Mariners 2. Holy smokes, Kyle, crunch that pitch from Yusmeiro Petit.
I love Rick Riz. But, man, this kid, he's a rookie, leading the league with 17 hits, and the Mariners put out a thing that he hits safely in each of his first 10 games, as Rick mentioned there. And the only other Mariners to do that is rookies Joey Cora, Andy Chavez, and D. Gordon. And it's not been done since 2007 by a rookie. So I guess, you know, there's still, I mean, he came in at the end of the season last year and hit, what, 6 home runs in like 10 or 11 games. And, yeah, you know, he just continues to impress. And a lot of it is just some of the pitches that he's hitting, taking it opposite field on down and, you know, breaking away curveballs. And so he's really been impressive. And the guy seems like he's legit. Now, can he go at this blistering pace? Probably not. He's going to run into some problems at some point. But, man, he's fun to watch.
Yeah, he is. And he's really athletic. And you see the athleticism in his swing. I love his approach. He seems really confident when at the plate. You know, some guys walk into the plate, Dave, and you're like, I feel for this guy. There's no confidence oozing out of his body. And then you never feel that when Kyle Lewis is at the plate. And he's patient. You know, early in his in the summer camp and early in the season, he would chase a lot of pitches. But now you can almost guarantee he's going to take that first pitch. It can be right down the pipe. He's going to take that first pitch. He likes to see it. So he's beginning to develop his strategy at the plate. And that's what the great ones do. They have a plan when they go in. They study their pitchers. They stick to their plan. I was never good at hitting baseballs. If it wasn't a fastball right down the pipe, I couldn't touch it. You know, so I admire these guys who are patient and they wait for their pitch. Even if it looks beautiful, they go up there with a plan. And that's what I see out of this guy. And I'm excited. And you know, did you see the game against the Angels when his brother was being interviewed during his at bat? And it was so cool just to hear what his brother thinks Kyle is thinking at that moment, at that time. And he was probably pretty accurate because that's his boy. So just the whole Kyle Lewis story has been great. I'm looking forward to seeing a lot more of the kid.
Yeah, he's just such a great kid too. We've interviewed him a couple of times, coming back from knee injuries and all kinds of things. So he just embodies what this team's about. Well, coming up next, we're going to sweep the dial. The XFL's back. The MLB players are furious over Rob Manfred's comments, and Yoenis Cespedes goes AWOL. We'll listen to all of that when we sweep the dial. That's next on Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
So The Rock, a.k.a. Dwayne Johnson, has joined Danny Garcia and Redbird Capital Partners to buy the XFL for $15 million, ensuring that the new league will have some of the flair of previous owner Vince McMahon. The first question, of course, is when they will bring the league back to the field. McMahon marketed the XFL as a made-for-TV product that could transition to a bubble concept during the coronavirus pandemic if needed. Certainly, broadcasters would love additional football content. But prior to bankruptcy, the XFL laid off nearly its entire workforce. It would be quite a logistical challenge to scale up the league in time to organize a quality product by the spring of 2021. We shall see what The Rock has cooking.
Yeah, you know what? I was really excited with the XFL. I thought they did a really good job. And you know who's really happy is Maura Dooley, because she was the sideline reporter for your Seattle Dragons. But, yeah, this is good news that The Rock came in. And, you know, he was saying hopefully he has the flair to pull this off. He definitely has the flair, right? Is there anybody that doesn't love Dwayne Johnson? Does it? And really, I mean, do you ever refer to him as Dwayne Johnson? He's just The Rock.
No, he's The Rock, and yeah, everybody knows what's cooking with The Rock. So yeah, I'm excited about it because I'm with you, Dave. I know the quarterback play wasn't good, and there's some concerns you could have about the XFL, but I just thought it was fun. It filled a void in the sports calendar, and you had a team here in Seattle. The attendance was good. I never felt like, I know it was short-lived, but I wanted to watch every Dragons game that I could, and I was entertained by it. I liked the rules. Never did get to see overtime and see what that would have been like with the two teams going back and forth. But hopefully The Rock will get things going in time to have XFL back next year.
No, you guys are right, man. I loved it. And what I loved most about it is it provided opportunities for guys to get back in the league. Because a lot of the times, if you don't make it, you're probably cut to Canada, and to get back from Canada is tough. And a lot of guys don't even make it to Canada. So you're giving guys somewhere in the States a place to try to chase their dreams. And if anyone's going to get the country excited about football, it's got to be The Rock, right?
Hannah, the players were furious because as part of his statement to our Carl Ravage, he mentioned the players have to do better, and that really angered the players. They felt like he was finger pointing. John Lester of the Cubs, for example, responded, paraphrasing here, saying, hey, we're the ones who are taking the risk. But this is at the end of a week of finger pointing from both sides. We had tweets from David Price, from Anthony Rizzo, calling into question parts of the health and safety protocol and whether safety was a priority. I can tell you behind the scenes, Major League Baseball Player Association, conversations all the time, they're working together. But this undercurrent of distrust and suspicion has been there all throughout this process, so different than the NBA and the NHL.
There's Buster Olney talking about MLB players being furious with Manfred. It's maybe a little leftover, you think, from the contract negotiation and the agreement for, you know, a 60-game season. I mean, I think that went back and forth. And, you know, it's funny. I haven't really even thought about that, guys, until now. And this flares up again. But, you know, when that whole labor dispute was going on, I was like, oh, man, I hope this doesn't linger. And it really hadn't. But now, all of a sudden, they don't like Rob Manfred wagging their finger at him.
I guess not. I don't know where he's wrong on that one, but I guess it could have gone without saying. But, yeah, the Cardinals now with 13 positive tests, and we don't know. The schedule, I thought things would go better than this with baseball. I didn't know if it would go as well as it has with the NBA and NHL when they're playing in the bubble environment in those two leagues. But still, a non-contact sport, and you see the problems they're having getting under. They're having seven-inning doubleheaders now. They're doing everything they can to get this 60-game season in, and it's looking more and more doubtful that it's going to happen. And like Bump was saying in the first hour, it makes you wonder about the NFL, a contact sport. How are they going to pull this off?
All we're learning is that the bubble may be mandatory. If you want your league to be as safe as possible, to have your players feel like they're safe, your coaches and everyone else who's involved, the bubble might be the way to go. Now, to put NFL players in a bubble, that sounds super expensive, and I don't know if that's even possible. But you look at the NBA, things are rolling smoothly. Look at the NHL, same thing. So there's some questions here that need to be answered.
Yeah, I think you said this, Bump, that what's a reasonable amount that we can expect of, because people are going to test positive, and it's just going to happen. Not, and some of it might be you take every precaution and it just happens anyway. But That's the thing I think that that it'll be interesting when the NFL starts is, you know, you see like a lot of guys are like Peterson, but there's also serious cases too, so you just have to be very careful about it. But again, it's like, at what point do we say, okay, we're going to shut it down?
Something of concern. Yoenis Cespedes has not reported to the ballpark today. He did not reach out to management with any explanation for his absence, and the Mets' attempts to reach Cespedes have been unsuccessful. That's directly from Brody Van Wagenen. That's up the middle and a base hit for Swanson. Cespedes out of the lineup today. There had not been any explanation for that except that he's been struggling, but now it turns out that he is AWOL.
Well,
keep you up to date on that.
That's a concern. I mean, hope.
Certainly hope all is okay with Yoenis.
That's, yes.
Yeah, that is very strange. They sent security to his room, found it empty. He'd taken his belongings and just up and left. And through his agent, I guess, informed the team mid-game that he was going to opt out. But, you hope that that there's nothing serious going on here.
Yeah, why wouldn't he call the team? The manager, the manager Luis Rojas, was saying, yeah, I tried texting him, tried calling him, no response. And, a class act would just say, hey, you know, I'm done, I'm through. But I'm at least going to make the call to tell him what's going on. I'm sure there were a lot of people worried about his welfare. But it looks like he just figured, what the heck, I've earned enough money, 4 years, $110 million. He's in the final year of that contract. I added it up. He's made $87.5 million, or $82.5 million in the last 3 years. He probably figured, well, I'm doing okay. I don't need this anymore.
Yeah. Forget everybody else. You communicate for your teammates. They're worried about him. They don't know where he is. And those are your boys. You're going to battle with these guys. So at least holler at your boys and let them know that you're okay.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, yeah, it's a very odd situation. I'm not sure, you know, if this guy's Cespedes has exhibited this kind of behavior in the past, but very strange. I guess I instantly thought, okay, well, maybe he tested positive, but yeah, it's an interesting one. Well, hey, thanks for joining us today. We're going to give way to Mariner baseball here. We got the pregame show coming up here at 5 o'clock, first pitch at 6:10. I want to thank Bump, our guy Bump, for filling in, and also John Clayton and Ryan Divish. And we will talk to you tomorrow. Bob Stelton will be back. It's Bob, Dave, and more. And we get started at 3 o'clock, 7:10, ESPN Seattle.